The Western model of the universe is political, and engineering or architectural. And therefore, as one understands the operations of a machine by analysis of its parts, by separating them into their original bits, we have bitted the cosmos and see everything going on in terms of bits, bits of information, and have found that this is extremely fruitful in enabling us to control what's happening. After all, the whole of Western technology is the result of bitting. And so we thing the world. That is to say, in order to measure a curve, you have to reduce it to point instants and apply the calculus. So in exactly the same way, in order to discuss or talk about the universe, you have to reduce it to things. But each thing, or think, is, as it were, one grasp of that spotlight. Going chur, 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 like this, you see. So we reduce the infinite wiggliness of the world to grasps or bits. We're getting back to biting, you see, the idea of the teeth, to grasps of thought. And so we thereby describe the world in terms of things, just as that fisherman could describe his view by the number of net hole over through which the view was showing. But the problem that arises is this. First of all, very obviously, everybody knows, I hardly need to mention it. Go to the science of medicine. You get a specialist who really understands the function of the gallbladder. And he's studied gallbladders, gallbladders, gallbladders ad infinitum, and he really thinks he knows all about it. But whenever he looks at a human being, he sees him in terms of gallbladder. And so if he operates on the gallbladder, he may do so very knowledgeably about that particular area of the organism, but he does not foresee the unpredictable effects of this operation in other connected areas, because the human being's gallbladder is not a thing in the same way as the a spark plug in a car can be extracted and a new one replaced. Because the system isn't the same. There is a fundamental difference between a mechanism and an organism, which can be described operationally. Mechanism is assembled. You add this bit to that bit to that bit to that bit. But an organism grows. That is to say, when you watch in a microscope a solution in which crystals are forming, you don't see this thing of little bits coming in, coming in, coming in, joining each other and finally making up a shape. You see a solution where, well, it's like when you watch a photographic plate developing. But suddenly, the whole area which you're watching seems to organize itself, to develop, to make sense. Moving from the relatively simple and gooey to the relatively structured and prickly. But not by addition. So then, if we are trying to control and understand the world through conscious attention, which is a scanning system, which takes in everything bit, 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 what we are going to run into is that if that's the only method we rely on, everything is going to appear increasingly too complicated to manage. So that you get, for example, let's take the problem of the electronic industry. The catalogues of products that are being produced over the world by the electronic industry. Who has read all the catalogues? How do you know where you've got something you're working on, whether it's patented or not? Who else has taken out a patent? Has anybody had time to read all the catalogues? Well, nobody has. They're just voluminous. And it's exactly the same in almost any other field. There's an information explosion, like a population explosion. How on earth are you going to scan all that information? Yes, of course you can get computers to help you in this direction, but by Parkinson's law, the sooner you become more efficient in doing this, the more the thing is going to develop, so that you will have to have more efficient computers still to assimilate all the information. You'll be ahead, but only for a short time. So you see, there's this problem of the sort of competition of consciousness, of its... How fast can you go duty 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 and keep track of it, you see? And say, I've got a good memory, I can keep track of that. And you say to you, I bet you can't. I'll go more complicated than you. See, look, musicians do this, they're drummers, you know. And they get things going, and they start, and so long as they count, and lots of musicians do count, which is crazy, but they do. And they count, and they out-complicate each other to the point where you can't retain it any longer in memory. So you say, okay, if I can't retain it, we've got this gadget here that can. And we've got these marvelous mechanical memories, and they will retain it. And they'll go much more fancy. They'll go this duty, duty, duty at a colossal speed, like that, you see. But it's the same old problem. Because you've got something that can outdo that. So we end up asking, but supposing there were some other way of understanding things. Let's go back from the spotlight to the floodlight, to the extraordinary capacity of the human nervous system to comprehend situations instantaneously, without analysis. That is to say, without verbal or numerical symbolism of the situation in order to understand it. I hope you understand what I mean by that. It's clear. We do that. We have this curious ability of pattern recognition, which the mechanical systems have only in a very primitive way. Xerox have put out a machine which recognizes figures written in almost anyone's handwriting, provided their handwriting is fairly grade school and normal. But a computer has a terrible time trying to recognize the letter A when it's printed in, say, sans serif, Gothic, longhand, or whatever kind of A you may write. The human recognizes instantly this pattern, but the computer is still at a disadvantage here. It seems to lack a kind of capacity I would call field organization, because it's all punctive, it's digital. It is like a newspaper photograph, you know, which when you look at it under a microscope is all dots. Now, so the problem is this. In developing technology, are we leaving out of consideration our strongest suit, which is the brain itself? See, we are at a situation where the brain is still not really worked out by even the most competent neurologists. It puzzles them. They can't give a model of the brain in numerical or verbal language. Now, you are that, you see. You are this thing. You yourself are this thing which you yourself can't figure out. In the same way, that I cannot touch the tip of this finger with the tip of this finger. I can't bite my own teeth. But I, who is attempting to touch the tip of this finger with this finger, am, by the sheer complexity of my structure, far more evolved than any system which I can imagine. This is, in a way, slightly akin to the Gödel theorem, that you can't have a system of, say, a logic which defines its own axioms. The axioms of any given system must always be defined in terms of a higher system. All right, so you are the most complex thing that has yet been encountered in the cosmos. And you can't figure you out. Now, suppose we're going to try to do that and become, as it were, completely transparent to ourselves so that we entirely understand the organization or the mechanics of our own brains. What happens when we do that? Well, you're back in the situation of God. When you're God, what are you going to do? When you're God, you know what you're going to do? You're going to say to yourself, man, get lost. Because what you'll want is a surprise. And when you figured everything out, there won't be any surprises. You'll be completely bored. But on the other hand, a person, I would say, who is really functioning completely is basically a person who trusts his own brains. And permits his brain to operate at a more optimal level. In other words, he knows how to think things out, but he makes his best discoveries without thinking. In other words, you all know very well the processes of creative invention. You've got a problem, you think it over, and you can't find out any answer to it because the digital system of thinking is too simple, too clumsy to deal with it. It's more complex. There are more variables than can be kept in mind at one time. So you say, I'll sleep on it. Or you go to the Institute of Advanced Studies at Princeton, or Behavioral Sciences at Stanford, where they pay you to goof off, which is highly excellent idea. And you moon around, and you've got a blackboard, and you look out of the window and pick your nose, and so on. And your brain eventually hands you the solution to the problem. And you immediately, because you have technical knowledge, you recognize that's a solution. But then, naturally, you go back and check it. And you work the bit-by-bit form of thinking on it and see, now, does it come out in those terms? And if it does, everybody will agree with you, yes, that's the answer. But if it doesn't come out in those terms, they won't agree with you. Because you haven't subjected it to the socially acceptable, traditional form of analyzing knowledge. But here's the problem. It takes an awful long time to check these things out. It takes an awful long time to arrive at the solution which you got, like that, by a purely calculative process. Most of the situations of life are such that they don't wait for us to make up our minds. So that an enormous amount of carefully worked out scientific knowledge is trivial. All very well, very finely worked out, but much too late. Because life comes at you from all sides, all over everywhere at once. And the only thing you've got to deal with that is the thing inside here, in the skull. Now, I'm not saying this to put down all this marvelous work of calculation, brought to immense sophistication electronically and so on. Not at all, because actually you people are the first people to understand the limitations of your own kind of knowledge. And you're going to have to tell the politicians about this. They don't understand. They think that this kind of knowledge is the answer to everything. And I think most of you know it isn't. Which is not something, I repeat, against technology. It's only saying that when you walk, you put your right foot forward. That's fine, but then you must put your left foot forward. So let's say that the great technological enterprise has been putting the right foot forward. But you must bring up the left foot. That is to say, bring up. Revaluation, a new respect for the organic type of organization, which is incomprehensible to technological thinking, but which always underlies it. That by itself doesn't work, because after you bring the left foot up, you've again got to bring up the right foot. The analytic. After goo comes prickles. After prickles comes goo. And you have to keep this thing up. And I think our danger at the present time is that we are so heady, so delighted with the results of prickles, that we've got to let back a little bit of goo into the system. Well, now, what we've got to try and do is, I think, to work out a way of making the brain itself more efficient. And this is the thing that civilized education has neglected. Lynn White, to quote him again, used to say that the academic world today only values three kinds of intelligence. Verbal intelligence, mnemonic intelligence, in other words, good at remembering, and computational intelligence. He said it entirely neglects kinesthetic intelligence, social intelligence, and he had at least seven kinds of intelligence, I forget what they all were. But it is this extraordinary capacity of the neural organization, say, to engage in pattern recognition and in solving instantly certain complex problems without knowing how it does it. The trouble is, when you do something you don't know how to do, you've got a non-repeatable experiment, in a certain sense. In other words, you can't explain to someone else how to put it together. But you can do it like you can open and close your hand without any knowledge of physiology. Do it every time. Whoops, I don't know how I do it. I just do it, you see. So we have an enormous potential of intelligence, of knowing how to do all sorts of things, which, to the extent that we are academically minded people, we won't allow ourselves to do, because we can't explain it. You know, there are, for example, there's a way of cooling a brazing furnace. It's very simple. But engineers say it's theoretically impossible. It can't happen. It's like bees can't fly by the laws of aerodynamics, but they do. So the rather practical issue I come to is this. That technology, if it relies exclusively on linear thinking, is going to destroy the environment. It's going to become too complicated to handle. Man is going to be like the dinosaur, which had to have a brain in its head and a brain in its rump because it was so big. You know, the caveman kept a dinosaur, and when he went to bed at night, he'd clump it on the tail with a club, and it'd scream at 8 o'clock in the morning. Wake him up. And it seems to me we're getting into that kind of Saurian situation with our technology, which is going to lead us to extinction. So the question is, are we going to foul things up by insisting on using linear input information and controlling it as the dominant tool of controlling the world? Or can we master all that, as we have done, and still use the linear input and analysis, but with a fundamental trust in our power to assimilate multiple input, although we really don't know how we do it? And my point is that you can't find an absolute which you can pin down, you see. So there always remains in any human operation the basic central thing, which you can't pin down because it's you. Just as the teeth can't bite themselves. Now, the assumption of Judeo-Christian culture is that man in his nature is sinful and therefore can't be trusted. The assumption of at least ancient Chinese culture is that man in his essential nature is good and therefore has to be trusted. Because they say to us, if you can't trust your own basic nature, you can't really rely on the idea that you're untrustworthy. Therefore, you're hopelessly fouled up. So this has amazing political and other consequences, this different assumption. If we say, no, we human beings are fallible and basically selfish and really, really fundamentally evil, and therefore we need law and order. We need a control system to put us in order. We thereby project these control systems into the church or into the police or into somebody who are really ourselves disguised. See, it's like daylight saving time. Everybody could simply get up an hour earlier. But instead of doing that, we alter the clock, because the clock is a kind of authority. And we say, well, the clock says it's time for you to get up. And the Amerindians laugh at the pale faces, because they say, pale face, he doesn't know when he's hungry until he looks at his watch. And so in this way, we become clock dominated. And the abstract system takes over from the physical, organic situation. And this is my big pitch, if I'm going to make a big pitch, is that we've run into a cultural situation where we've confused the symbol with the physical reality, the money with the wealth, and the menu with the dinner. And we're starving on eating menus.